Organics, it's still very much a niche market, but you've got major retailers now who have well and truly discovered that people, shoppers in particular, want organic products, whether it's fruit, veggies, wine and more. A new study, the Australian Organic Market Report, has just been released. It was commissioned by the BFA, that's the Biological Farmers of Australia, which turns 25 this year, and it was researched by Swinburne University and Mobium Group. It tells a story of more and more Australians prepared to pay a little extra for organics, if not every week, then at least occasionally. Dr. Andrew Monk is the Director of Biological Farmers of Australia and joins me now. Andrew, thank you for joining us on Bush Telegraph. Appreciate it.
Pleasure, Cameron. Good morning.
Happy birthday, first of all, 25 years. For people not aware, your group, they do certification, don't they?
Yeah, look, it's our subsidiary that does that. So we're known more by consumers by our subsidiary, which is Australian Certified Organic, and what we call the little bud logo on there. That's our brand in the marketplace, but our independent subsidiary does that. BFA is more an industry member services group, I guess you could call it, and it does all sorts of things like commissions these sorts of reports and other publications.
Come a long way in 25 years, hasn't it? It used to be a group of a few people on the fringe, really.
Indeed. It was a mixture of, there were some commercial farmers involved, in other words, people who had to feed their families, but nonetheless, they were viewed very much as fringe. And in fact, the very name biological, if you think about it, there's no term organic in our main mother entity name. And part of the reason for that is organic was either very unknown or very much a bit of a stigma around it. I think people are progressively now realising, both either at farm level or let alone consumer level, that it's got tangible benefits to it, that it's a real farming system, and for some clearly it's a good option.
Let's talk about what's in the report or what you know about the industry based on some of this research. 25 years. How big is the industry now?
Well, look, if you look on one of the graphs that tells the tale of this, you know, it's been progressively growing, but at a, you know, glacial rate, really, until about the last 5 or 6 years. We've been doing these biennial or every 2 year reports now since 2008. And around that time, there was a bit of a parabolic curve or a curvy graph going upwards. One of the fundamental drivers of that was around the supermarkets getting more serious about trying to range it. So the industry's, you know, been chugging along. You know, it's sitting around maybe 1% of retail value now, but growing. And if you look at the US or the EU, you've got them at between 2-3% of retail value. So we think there's a lot of blue sky ahead, even though, as you say, and you're right, it's a niche market. So we produce this report to basically make sure producers who are either in the industry or thinking about getting in are very clear about the real facts out there, rather than thinking, great, I've heard it's a growth industry, let's get straight into it. It's clearly still niche, all the normal market aspects apply.
But we do tend to follow both the US and Europe in a lot of these food trends, don't we? So I guess you look to that 2-3% and think that's a realistic goal for the Australian industry.
Yeah, well, look, it's tricky. Possibly more the US. I mean, it might surprise people to hear that even in the US over the last few years, and they've got some pretty dire economic situation going on there, there's still been growth in the organic sector through that time, above and beyond background levels of food and beverage growth. So I'd suggest maybe we look more to that. Europe's a little bit different. I mean, you've got, say, Austria, Denmark and Switzerland sitting, in fact, more around the 5-7% mark of retail. Solid niche that one is. I don't know, in fact, whether we'll ever get that high. Who knows? But certainly the involvement of the bigger retailers is meaning that availability is there now for consumers. So more consumers walking past aisles where the product's sitting there. And that's one of the fun. It sounds pretty crude and simple, but the actual availability, which is, I think it was the second highest barrier. You know, when consumers are asked, what's your barrier to consuming more organic? They say ease of access. So because it is becoming more easy, there's literally more people actually consuming.
The temptation is to look for a Rachel Carson Silent Spring type moment that triggered interest in this, but it's as simple as the power of the supermarkets, isn't it?
Well, look, it's one of the drivers, and I don't want to over-talk up the supermarkets alone, because clearly the industry marketplace is very diverse. We've got a very solid independent retail sector that has basically grown the industry, as you say, from the 25 years plus time period that we've been growing. They're there and they're not going away. In fact, one of the profiles we do in the report is on an independent retailer now got 8 stores and going very, very well. So there's that, and of course people know about farmers markets. It's a licorice all sorts in terms of that. But I guess the upside of not having a fear campaign or fear factors that have driven the industry is that it's solidly growing instead of, fluffy up and down sort of thing. And I think the one single market where there's seen some softening in the last few years has actually been the UK market. And arguably some of that fear factor that drove the original growth has maybe seen a contraction in times of economic stress. So we're not seeing that here, obviously, because we've got a fair bit of blue sky to go.
Okay. What do you know about who's buying? Because you mentioned ease of access as a barrier. The logical thing to think is that the price stops people as well. It's fair to say, more expensive, yes, organics as a product. Yep. Is that a key factor?
Yeah, look, it is. In fact, the top three, and I might come back to the third one as well, the very top one is price/value. In other words, people say, you know, why would you buy more? What's your barrier? The price factor is clearly there. And there's a reason for that. Organic often is more expensive to produce. If you're not putting herbicides on your carrots and you've got to use labour or other means, it's going to cost more. If you're going to feed your chicken with organic feed and no antibiotics, it's going to take longer to grow. It's going to cost more. But I'm regularly joking, organic chickens are better fed than most Australians because they've actually got to be fed organic feed the whole time. So there's those cost factors involved. The third barrier is, can I trust it? And the interesting thing in the report, because we track it every couple of years with the Mobium Group, as you said before, is ease of access has come down, as I said before. And the second one has been, yeah, can I trust it? And both as barriers have significantly come down. In other words, the confidence in, can I trust it's organic, has grown. And we think that's a lot around, A, people understanding certification marks better. So,
because the term organic can still be used, can't it?
Yes. Yeah, look, it can. There's no...
Without certification, I mean.
Yeah. There's solid consumer protection laws now and very good precedents in law where operators, a bit like in the free range space now, organic had its, you know, free range moment a few years ago where someone was, funny enough, trying to sell free range eggs as organic. They were trying to sell them as certified organic and they were pinged at the post because they were found not to be.
You had a problem with milk, I think, several years before that. There was one as well.
That was a bit more infamous and a bit messy, in fact, and it led to the ACCC working with us to achieve a baseline standard. So we've got a Standards Australia standard even sitting now there in the background for legal reasons, and it's really good. So we've got that, but we're not likely anytime soon to ever get legislation locking it in. So it brings us back to consumer laws, the activities of the ACCC and our own industry in terms of certification and auditing to and testing of product to basically regulate. It works pretty well, basically, but ultimately it's got to be the marketplace that supports that. And to the credit of the bigger retailers, one good thing they've done is say, you can't trade with us unless you're certified. So that in its own right, I think, has led to a greater awareness. So one of the stats in the consumer section of the report is that more than 60% of consumers said, if I see a certification mark, I'm more confident in buying that. And more than, I think it was 36%, so more than a third said, I wouldn't even touch it if it wasn't. So they're indicators significantly up on the last 2 years.
Have you got around the problem that there were so many certifiers that was a little confusing as well?
Yeah, look, we're a little bit biased, but the stats speak for themselves again. Again, we ask Mobium to report on that. We sort of, they ask questions of consumers. It's like a news poll type of thing, basically, where it's statistically significant across the demographics of Australia. And the Bud logo, by no coincidence, is now on the vast majority of food product. And that, you know, that's the one with the words Australian Certified Organic on it. 31%, I think, of consumers now have said, so that's up 25% increase on 2 years ago, have said, yeah, I recognise that mark. So it sounds low, but that's of all Australians, and that's a significant growth for us. And again, it's a indication of it's more prevalent, so of course they're going to be seeing it more. And back in 2010, Choice, the consumer group, actually awarded our group the Best Food Endorsement Program Award for, you know, integrity and standard setting and logo presence and recognition. So I think it's a culmination of things like that are giving confidence to the consumers, and I think that's why that third barrier is now significantly coming down.
I wonder if people actually know what they're getting when they buy organic, though. It seems like a simple question, but especially when it comes to livestock production,
yes.
There's a lot more to it than I think many people would understand.
Yeah, look, absolutely right, Cam. There's that, and sadly, possibly, there's so much more than they ever will. So I guess, you know, we ask again, we have Mobium ask questions of consumers, what do you understand organic to mean and what's important to you? And the fundamental first ones that most people would recall are things like, you know, produce without pesticides, produce without, you know, additives.
Doesn't mean no spray though, does it?
No, it doesn't. Like there's lots of different biological things you can use, but certainly your classic synthetic, you know, fertilizers, synthetic pesticides and herbicides you can't use. And I think that's what consumers mostly first think of. But in the top five, include things like non-GM, you know, no genetically modified organism presence, no hormones and antibiotics used in animals, coming back to that question, and a general animal welfare aspect. So and I don't know whether that's an association with organic by design is free range, so they're going great, they're not in cages.
Is that specified, or is that because the system won't work without using things like antibiotics and growth promotants? Yeah. The intensive system won't work without them.
It's a bit of both, actually. It's certainly in organic standards, it's black and white saying you just can't, you know, battery cage and hens, and you've got a, and all animals have to have access to range, basically, and pasture. So that's a fundamental, you know, concept within the organic system. And of course, luckily in Australia, with beef and the like, we've got, you know, and lambs, we've got a lot of that anyway, not like the US. But what's different is organic even then goes further and says, and you can't put, you know, growth promoting hormones in them. So again, you know, the animal's going to take a bit longer to grow naturally, you know, in inverted commas, therefore, and that's going to cost more for the producer. So that's one of the many reasons you'll see a cost differential continuing in the marketplace.
My guest here on Bush Telegraph is Dr. Andrew Monk, Director of the Biological Farmers of Australia. We're talking about the birthday of BFA. It turns 25 years, but we're also talking about some new research that's come out about trends in the organic market here in Australia. We started off on price here, but we digressed somewhat. Is it as simple as saying people who can afford to buy organic products do buy organics, and those without so much disposable income just can't afford to buy?
Yeah, look, that's a great question, Cam. In fact, it's really interesting. Again, with the Mobian Group, what they do is they break consumers down into four types. And it's they do a tracking thing called lifestyle of health and sustainability. In other words, they look at consumers in terms of their belief systems of lifestyles of health and sustainability. And their four categories include leaders, which I think speak for themselves. They're about 12% of the population. They tend to buy green energy, or they think that you should at least.
Yeah.
They 9 out of 10 do buy organic on occasion. And at the other end of the spectrum, you've got your laggards, which I think also speak for themselves. They'll be reticently doing anything until the absolute last minute, usually having to have it rammed down their throat. Fascinatingly, with laggards, who are, I think, about 16% of the Australian population now, almost one in four, I think it was 24%, have said in the past year they've consumed something organic. That gobsmacks me, because it's not only up, I think in 2010 it was 16%. So it's actually technically a 50% growth in 2010 figures, where they've said, well, I bought something organic. Could have been anything. It could have been an organic fizzy drink at a cafe, but they've bought something. That says to us, it comes back to that issue of mainstreaming. And it also says to us that it's not about that type of belief system necessarily. I mean, clearly there's a trend to those who think, yeah, look, organic is good. It's good for the environment. It's good and healthy for me. I'll buy it. But you still get a broad cross-section. What Mobium, though, point out too, though, is socioeconomic status, coming back to your question of price, is not a good predictor of people necessarily being in the low-HASS leader band, and therefore also is not necessarily a good predictor of people buying organic. So, you know, you'll see there's a big retail group called Whole Food Markets in the States. It's stock exchange listed, many, you know, stores.
Like the poster boy, really, aren't they? Internationally, well,
they
the are. Organics
Absolutely
movement.
Absolutely are. Yeah. And they selectively position around university towns wherever they can as a first preference. It's more either about education or awareness, first and foremost. So most students, as most people would know, don't have as much disposable income, but they'll more actively buy. There's an awareness issue going on there. And that's why
they're idealistic. Hasn't been beaten out of them just yet.
Well, there is that. And it's kind of funny, whereas some others who have far more disposable income will sort of say, oh, I can't afford, you know, to buy a bit more. So, but it's amazing. It's about a value system here. And like the really good example is milk. So the dairy in this report has said there's been a significant growth. I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's in the 60% range, I think, of growth since 2010. It's a solid industry, you know, market sector now. A lot of hard work from a lot of good dairy farmers who have worked together collectively over the years to set a realistic price and say, this is a sustainable price for us. This is, in the last 2 years, that growth has been in the face of the supermarket dollar a litre war, basically, that's gone on. And organic per litre still sits at retail level around the $2.50 to $3 a mark. So in other words, it's almost 2 to 3 times more per litre, and you've seen a significant further growth in sales. So clearly there's a band of people, and it's not just those who are flush with a lot of extra cash who are saying, I understand and appreciate the value implicit in that product. For some, it might be about the pesticide issue and or hormones or whatever it might be. For others, it's simply, look, I understand that I'm then supporting, I've heard about this good cooperative that do this good thing, you know, all together. So there's all sorts of reasons people are buying into that.
Now, you'll be expecting me to bring up the Stanford Uni report a couple of months back, which got wide coverage, and which you probably weren't too keen on.
We were actually, I'll tell you
why. But it highlighted that people, from looking at, I think it was 250 studies, there was no clear nutritional benefit to organic food, and it also questioned whether it could be guaranteed that the food would be chemical free or not. Do people from your reports buy organic food because they think its nutritional value is better than conventionally farmed?
Yeah, look, it's an interesting one, this one. The reason I personally was quite happy, and I think we were as a group, were that firstly, that apart from some of the silly headlines that sort of said, you know, suggested there was no benefit at all, It wasn't actually saying that. I'll come back to nutrition in a minute. First and foremost, it clearly said, obviously, and it's almost like a duh moment, organic is a way to reduce your pesticide exposure, clearly, because it prohibits the use of them. So it fundamentally affirmed that, and that in its own right is good for us. It just clearly says that point blank. Secondly, it actually then said, the challenge is, when it comes to the nutrition space, it's such a complex area. We've had to turf out most of these different studies because there were too many variables not controlled for properly. And if you think about it, I'm sure people in 50 years' time are going to look back at us and go, we remained with such a crude understanding of what nutrition actually meant. And then lastly, though, there were some little pop-out bits. And again, they don't really know what this actually necessarily means. But for instance, in organic milk, coming back to that, omega-3 fatty acids were actually statistically higher in organic. Now, whether or not that's a health benefit or not, we actually still don't know. We're told that, you know, you should eat more of those sorts of foods with those things in it. So there were actually some indicators suggesting there's something going on there, but we just literally don't know still. So we sort of welcome that sort of study because we say, great. What they ultimately said is there's a big gaping hole in our understanding in this space.
But when you have findings that say you can't guarantee that these products are chemical free, that's got to hurt because that's your core business, isn't it?
Well, look, it is. Although I'd say this, that clearly we actively prohibit its use. And sadly, in the world generally, I mean, for those who might use fly spray or even go to a friend's place where there's been fly spray sprayed around before you go and sit down to eat, you get exposed to all those additional chemistries. It's almost impossible to say in the world, you know, you can get completely eliminate those things. The next best thing we can do is say we're going to audit, test, and certify a system that prohibits their use actively, and therefore that's your best means of lowering your exposure.
You're controlling the system, not the exposure.
Yeah. And lastly, I'd say, and this is what I think is the fundamental pretext of organic, is that it's not trying to be a glossy, fluffy, you know, sales pitch. It's actually with integrity trying to say, look, we're going to try and be as open as we possibly can about A, how we set standards around these things, and then how we regulate to them and produce to them. And I think in this day and age where, you know, you can pick up a packet of any kind of product and go, it's hard to find out where it's come from. It's hard to know who the hell produced that anyway, and all those related things, let alone what are those numbers in there, I just don't understand. It's in that sort of market context that I think organic is offering a value proposition to more people saying, I am confused, I want it simple. You know, and to quote Michael Pollan, who I'm sure you've possibly had on the show before, you know, I want to eat foods that actually I can understand the ingredients, and my grandmother would as well. You know, the organic is ultimately about that proposition.
Do you ever, given that so much of this stemmed from philosophy and what you think is the right way to treat the environment and the human body and the rest, given the talk around food security at the moment, do you ever question the growth in organics and the argument that we can't feed the world on it, uses more farming land, you know, lower yields on more land? There are arguments against it now, rightly or wrongly. Yeah. Do you ever question whether the growth in organics is a good thing environmentally?
Look, definitely, Cam. Geez, you're asking all the tough questions there. But look, you're asking the great questions because I'm always frustrated with how poor the question is, with the greatest of respect, in the first instance. We often get the assumptions behind the question are fundamentally often flawed. Let's pull it apart. Firstly, we can't feed ourselves on this globe right now. That's about distribution systems and resource allocation generally. It's got little to do with the production system. Secondly, though, in fact, we've ratcheted up our production system reliant on petroleum products in the first instance and synthetic, in inverted commas, ways of producing more. We're on a treadmill of just simply trying to produce more without thinking about, can we actually sustain that naturally in the long term? Organic is trying to intervene in that whole dialogue and practice and go, here is a way we think you can, and in fact, through time, you can increase the productivity of the farm. Third bit is, if you look at a lot of smaller holders in the third world, where the big concern is about feeding the world, different from, you know, we're worried about eating too much in places like Australia, so there's a different issue going on here. In fact, organic systems have been confirmed even by the UN, the Food and Agricultural Organization, as in fact, hectare for hectare being more productive when they're smaller holdings and very diverse in their production systems. And, you know, you go to anywhere from Nepal to wherever, and this is one element of the organic, you know, system. It ranges right through to the bigger producers here in Australia. But, you know, they're diverse. They have, one or two cash crops, but then they actually feed themselves and their local neighbours and trade with some other things. That's called productivity and that's called sustainability. So you've got that issue.
Interesting stuff. All right, thanks, Andrew. That's Dr. Andrew Monk, who's the Director of the Biological Farmers of Australia. A couple of Facebook comments there that are in line of what some of Andrew had to say, so you can check them out for yourself anytime you want.